Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about dicamba-tolerant crops, or as some people would refer to them, Xtend. If you've got any questions for us or you'd like us to talk about anything here on the show, you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, agphdmedia, Darren Hefty or Brian Hefty. We already have some questions coming into the Ag PhD mailbag. We're going to get to that later in the show. But to begin with, Darren, on the dicamba-tolerant crops, this is one of the things we were just talking about yesterday. I said, I'm almost tired of talking about the dicamba-tolerant crops because there are some people that say, man, I have to have them. They're really helping me for weed control. But then you got the flip side where people say, well, if people don't use the dicamba right, it can damage crops and, for that matter, can damage other plant species, whether it's trees or flowers or anything like that.
Was the debate this charged when Roundup Ready soybeans came out? I mean, was the negative?
No.
I remember for our dad, his negative was, well, my regular beans are yielding a little bit more than what my Roundup Ready beans are, or what the Roundup Ready beans are yielding, so I want to stay with what has more yield. That seemed to be his biggest objection, that I don't think I need it yet for weed control, and I think I can get more yield without it. Well, of course, the yield thing's been answered now. Now the traded soybeans have plenty of yield punch, and there isn't a big yield difference between trait packages. But this dicamba thing, the off-target movement, has been something unusual and different.
Well, here's the reason why. With Roundup, there was a little bit of concern, and there were some people that were fighting it. But the thing is, the Roundup didn't move far. It would move maybe 50 feet into a field, and that's it. It was physical drift. It was physical drift always. Whereas the dicamba, the unfortunate thing is, there's a lot of volatility that ends up happening. So you spray it on target, then it picks up and moves off target. And in some cases, it can move quarter mile, maybe even a half mile away. Well, that's really challenging. You know, I don't mind physical drift. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like it when physical drift occurs, but I'm simply saying anybody can see the wind is blowing toward the neighbor. I need to stay further away from the neighbor. That's easy. What is concerning is when, with dicamba, if you spray it on, then the product picks up later and moves, and the wind changes directions, and you thought everything was going to be fine, and now it's not.
Well, you know, we've just gotten into a lot of discussion. This is going to be a fun one to talk about today, because now we've had some experience. We've had plenty of, I mean, millions of acres, and we'll get some farmers and industry experts on here as well, just to talk about what their observations have been. But when you think about air inversions, I'd say there's been more air inversion talk now than we've ever heard before. And, you know, that this debate about volatility or air inversions or whatnot, I guess some of it comes
Those are two completely separate things.
I know, but people's definitions of these things are a little bit different. And so we're going to hear that today, that, well, here's what we've seen and here's how stuff has gotten across the road or across the fence or whatever. And it may be termed differently. I remember, you know, Monsanto was coming out with statements saying, well, this is what's going on. And they were saying, nope, it's definitely not volatility, but it did move after an application. And so for some people, moving after an application means volatility necessarily. And when they were arguing, No, those particles never got down onto plants.
Yeah, no way.
So I don't know. It's pretty tough when you can't see it. It's pretty tough to know. And so I think BSF had just an awesome video that they put together with smoke, and they had some smoke cans that they put out in a field, and just watching how that moved and so forth with various winds, I think was very helpful for a lot of farmers to see, oh, okay, here's what can happen and what does happen. And then I think the education about spray tank cleanout has been really important too, because we've seen a number of issues with spray tank cleanout that farmers say, well, I think there was drift here. And turns out, wow, when's the last time you really thoroughly cleaned that sprayer out? And that's good for all products, as we've seen it with HPPDs, we've seen it with atrazine, we've seen it with other things, that Valor that just haven't gotten completely out of the tank, and then we end up carrying it around and doing it to ourselves.
Yeah, here's the good news. Most of the time, the dicamba movement, well, it may have cupped somebody's leaves slightly, the amount that moved was so tiny that it didn't do yield damage. So that's the good thing. But the bad news is, if it looks like there's damage, then that perception is in your mind, the perception's in the neighbor's mind, the perception is in the general public's mind, and now all of a sudden we're viewed as farmers as doing something that's bad, that's wrong, and we can't have that. So, you know, that's why you're seeing more limitations now on the dicamba label. And basically, it's 45 days after planting. Well, I want to have my beans planted May 1st. Well, that then cuts me off June 15th. The label in the past, for South Dakota anyway, we haven't had any further restrictions in the federal label, I could go up to R1, so basically July 10th. So now, for all my beans that I'm going to plant, in my opinion, on time, May 1st, I have to be done spraying roughly 25 days earlier than I did before. Now, the thing is, for us, we'd already kind of figured this out. June 15th already for us was the cutoff. But the problem with having an early cutoff like that is my beans aren't canopied yet. So now what do you do? Well, that's why this dicamba thing, our opinion is it's going to go to stacks soon. So we're going to see Liberty together with dicamba. Dicamba will be used as a burn down product, a very early post product, and then you come with Liberty for that last flush in late June, early July. So I think that's what's going to end up happening. What do you think?
Well, I like having multiple modes of action in the tank each time. And you look at trials that have been done.
Yeah, but what are you going to do on the last shot with Liberty? What you can't throw anything else in at that point.
I realize you may be limited on one application all year.
Yes, that's what I'm getting at.
That's possible. I agree, because you may not have two effective modes of action for that particular weed.
Yep.
But early on, there's certainly the opportunity for multiple things, because I'm really nervous. These guys that have been doing Liberty Link for a long time, Liberty, 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 all by itself, that's a recipe for trouble as well. We saw that happen with Roundup in the past, and we certainly don't want to see that happen with dicamba in these Xtend crops. We're going to talk about dicamba-tolerant crops on today's show. Stay tuned.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. And taking your questions today via email radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. talking dicamba tolerant crops today. And you know, everybody says, well, this company's too biased. We don't know if we can trust those. So let's just start with BASF. We've got a couple of different plays here. We got Chad Asmus with us. Chad, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Good, good. Now you're representing Liberty and you're representing Ingenia. So you don't really care which way guys go on these traits, or, hey, you know what? If you want to go conventional, that's cool. You got some really good offers there for weed control too. So, you know, when we're talking about dicamba tolerant crops, my argument to Brian here just before the break was, man, I can't wait for the stacks because I'm excited when we can put Liberty together with dicamba. I think that will be unbelievable for weed control.
Well, having options is what's important, and having multiple sites of action that growers can utilize on their farm and even across the geography, switching those up and being able to rotate is going to be important for longevity of all the sites of action out there. So that's why we're excited that growers are going to be able to still access the dicamba tolerant technology and Ingenia herbicide as part of that comprehensive weed management system for the next 2 years.
All right, so this year, everything that I've read and seen, there were many fewer incidents with dicamba than there were a couple of years ago. What really changed? What piece of education do you think made a big difference for growers?
Well, I think you really hit it there is education and experience. And so last year, all applicators were required to be trained, and that training for all dicamba applicators is going to be an annual thing. And so we're going to be working closely with the states and providing those training resources for all those applicators. And our training, particularly, we tried to go into more of the why behind the how, not just spew out a bunch of label requirements, but for the applicators to really understand why are these restrictions there and why do we have to be careful to follow them for successful on-target applications.
Hey, let's talk about that. Why about the before sunset and after sunrise, those kinds of restrictions that are now in place. And we're to understand this is mainly about air inversions. Can you talk to us about that and what happens to products if we spray in that susceptible window there around sunset or before sunrise?
Yeah, and actually that's one of the updates for the 2019 label is that window has been narrowed to about 1 hour after sunrise and to 2 hours before sunset. And the whole purpose there is to avoid spraying during a temperature inversion. And it's off-label to apply any pesticide during a temperature inversion. What can happen is just those small droplets stay suspended and they just hang. And you referenced earlier a video that we have of ingeniousstewardship.com, you know, with a fog machine just kind of showing how those particles can just hang and move really in unpredictable directions. And so giving some guidance there on the spray, daytime spray hours is another step to help make sure that applications aren't made during a temperature inversion.
You know, when we think about spraying, a lot of times there are just so many different variables there between boom height and speed and spray nozzles and the amount of volume of spray solution that we're putting out there. There are quite a few different things, and I think it's been good that the whole dicamba tolerant crop subject of spraying dicamba has raised all these things that farmers are really being more intentional about this. What kind of feedback are you getting from growers? What are you seeing that's really making an impact?
Well, I would say planning and preparation have been key elements of successful growers and utilization of the technology. You know, there are some pretty narrow application windows, right? And so having a plan in place, having a good residual down, you know, the 45 days after planting post-emerge window that's on the US EPA label, right? So you're going to have to kind of be proactive and look forward, look ahead and pick the spray days and go out there and be proactive about your application. Put a residual herbicide down there. So talk to your neighbors, know what's around you, know when you can spray, when you can't spray, have a plan B in place. And so planning and communication, I think, are two critical elements for being successful with Ingenia and the dicamba tolerant system.
Great tips there. Talking with Chad Asmus from BASF. Chad, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on today.
Thank you.
You know, one thing that Chad mentioned there is talking to neighbors, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from farmers about this, that this has been one of the big things for them, that they've probably talked more about what's across the fence than they have before. One of those farmers is Ryan down in Iowa. Ryan, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, good morning.
So would you say it's fair for your neighborhood that a lot of neighbors were talking about, hey, what kind of soybeans are you putting across the fence?
Oh, yeah. Yep, that was the hot topic this spring when you're planting and seeing what everybody was planting around you.
You know, I think that's a good thing. I kind of remember back when Roundup soybeans first started, and there was definitely those conversations of, I'm going to have Roundup Ready beans across the fence. What are you doing? And how careful do we have to be here? And so forth. You know, when you think about that, your rotation, mainly corn, soybeans in your part of the world, not so worried about dicamba and the corn, but certainly the soybeans were a big deal. Did you have much for weed control issues? I mean, were guys super happy with the program?
Yes. Yeah, I've been 100% dicamba beans for 2 years now, and it's some of the cleanest beans we've had since Roundup originally came out. So
that's fantastic. That's fantastic. You know, when you first started, were there some weeds that you said, man, I have to switch to dicamba tolerant beans or I'm just not going to get these under control?
Yeah, water hemp. That's the main weed we're fighting, I guess. So,
you know, for many of the farmers listening today, they're talking about Palmer pigweed and water hemp and broadleaf weeds as being the driver here to going to extend soybeans. What has been your experience in terms of yield and just overall performance, disease tolerance, and those things?
Well, we've had back-to-back some of our best soybean yields we've ever had. And, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, you don't burn them down any. The beans continue to grow, and they don't show any effects of getting sprayed. Whether that returns in some yield gain, we've had positive results the last 2 years, and we'll be 100% dicamba again next year.
What are you thinking on crop rotation? We're hearing a lot of movement on soybean acres to corn. Are you going to hold the rotation, or what are you hearing from your neighbors as well?
Well, we're kind of in a tough area. We've been extremely wet, and now the ground's froze. So we've got 1 day of tillage done. So it's going to kind of depend on the spring what our rotation is going to be. Usually we're 3/4 corn and 1/4 soybeans, and right now, we're kind of up in the air just because we did some severe damage to some fields just trying to get the crop out. And it's going to have to be an early spring to get things repaired up a little bit to where we can plant corn on back in some cornfields.
Yeah, I'm really hoping we get some nice dry weather between now and spring as well. There's a lot of wet fields out there, no doubt about that. And tillage and fertility and all those things that go into getting a cornfield in. Yeah, just didn't get done. You know, when you look at that, is there anything you would change this summer or this year? Do you say, man, I should have got that drainage work done? Or is it just one of those things that when you get a year like this, it just happens?
Yeah, there's not much we can do when Mother Nature decides to rain almost 50 inches in a year for us. So,
wow. Yeah, we had our biggest rain year ever on our farm as well, and we're set up for a wet year, but not this wet, that's for sure.
Yeah, yep.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much. Really appreciate talking to you today, and good luck. Hopefully you get that dry weather that you need.
Sounds good, thanks.
Talking about dicamba-tolerant crops on today's show, a lot of different things to discuss. We talked about some of the spray requirements and just overall performance out in the fields. But we'll get into some more topics here as our show continues. We're also taking your questions via email today, radio@agphd.com, and we'll get to those a little bit later in the show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Tired of that old warped poly boom ruining your spray applications? Express Boom from Hypro is a fully assembled stainless steel boom that ensures an even application of chemicals every time. Don't wait another season. Upgrade today. Hypro, helping you spray better.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about dicamba-tolerant crops. We've got Joe Sheffers with us right now. He works with Bayer. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
All right. We had some new label requirements going into the 2019 spray season. Can you talk about some of those you think will have a big impact and why we're making the changes?
So we were granted EPA approval for Xtendimax on October 31st, and that's a two-year label that potentially would expire on the 20th of December in 2020. There's some minor changes to the label this season. You know, it'll still continue to be a restricted use pesticide, and all the applicators will need to be certified again as they were last year. During those trainings, we'll clearly, you know, state what those changes are. You know, one of the maybe more noticeable be related to endangered and threatened plant species that are susceptible to dicamba, and that'll be a county-by-county review, per se, to say, okay, you know, do we have these plant species as listed as endangered species? And, you know, that'll require an additional buffer requirement around the entire perimeter of the field. There's also, as we had with North Dakota, a restriction based on when you can start in the morning and when you have to end in the evening. So, you know, you can't start spraying until an hour after sunrise, and then slightly different than what North Dakota had last year, but in a similar vein, we have to stop spraying 2 hours prior to sunset to avoid the inversions.
Joe, one of the things he said there was endangered plant species. Now, whenever I think about endangered species, I'm thinking animals. So are you saying there are plants, like, it, for example, we farm in South Dakota. Are there plants in South Dakota that are on the endangered species list?
So we don't have that listing of plant species. So you are correct in the fact that it is plant species related. And we don't have that, you know, complete list for all the states delineated yet. But personally, I'm not aware of any, you know, within your farming area and such that would create that restriction. But it is something new that is included in the label.
As a farmer, it just feels like the restrictions just continue to mount, not just on this, but on a lot of things that we do on the farm. So just tell us a little bit in kind of layman's terms, what have farmers done here the last couple of years to reduce any issues with dicamba moving?
So I think we covered a majority of, you know, the improvements during our training sessions. And, you know, I've been in the game for a lot of years, and we've known for a long time that cupping symptoms in soybeans are for a myriad of reasons.
Yep.
And, you know, we've, a couple years ago, you know, it felt like it was all volatility, or that was the conversation and the noise. But we knew that stress or how genetics respond to the environment, or the one I was most concerned about when we first looked at the technology, was contamination.
Yeah.
You know, from spraying from one thing to the other, carry over from prior herbicides.
Yep.
You know, we learned a lot on volatility related to AMS and drift and so forth. So there's just a number of things, but it was vastly improved this year compared to last year.
Yeah, that's what I saw too. I spent a lot of time traveling around in 2017, and there was way more movement than what we found in 2018. And I'm with you on the contamination thing. I did not realize how bad that was going to be, because I figured we've sprayed dicamba for 50 years now. If you haven't figured out how to clean it out of a tank, I don't even know what to tell you. But there was all kinds of it. And I think it was a lot of these people trying to go back and forth. So if you were 100% Xtend, obviously you didn't have the issue. But supply was limiting in a lot of cases. A lot of people said, hey, I just want to try it on some acres. So I think we did see an awful lot of that. Was there anything else that kind of stood out to you in 2018 that people maybe fixed and that really reduced the problem?
Well, I think the AMS component, there was a level of awareness there around making sure there's cleanliness around AMS being in the tank from a prior application.
Because that increases volatility.
Yeah, significantly. Okay. I mean, the ability for vapor grip to work is basically negated when you have AMS in the tank. So whether that's from spraying Roundup in a prior field and adding on top of it, or what, you know, any other way that AMS might find its way into that tank, it basically, you know, negates the purpose of the vapor grip within Xtendimax.
Yep. Well, we've been talking to Joe Sheffers with Bayer. Joe, thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You bet. All right, let's go next out to the state of West Virginia. We have Mike calling in today. He's a farmer out there. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm good. How about you, Seth, yourself?
Doing great. So we're talking about Xtend today, and I understand that you had some Xtend last year, and you were still seeing some movement, right?
A little. Not nearly as much as in 17, but I had some.
So what do you attribute that to? Why did it move, do you think?
I believe we really had some weather issues this year, and I am not a climatologist or anything to tell you what an inversion actually is, but we had some strange extremes in weather, and
Sure. That's
what I primarily attribute it to. The damage in 17, we didn't have measurable financial damage. It was more cosmetic
Sure. Than
anything,
yep.
But there was still a little bit, visible in 18.
So with this technology, I assume you're using it because you've had weed issues. What weeds are you really after, and how is the dicamba performing on the weeds that you are targeting?
It's performing very well, and I'll continue to use it. I'm anxious to also use the, you know, the Enlist genes as I, you know, become more familiar with what is there. But we had resistant mare's tail and giant ragweed that's really becoming an issue. We farm in the river bottoms and along the canal in the Ohio River, and they just seem to, I think they do well everywhere, but they really like our area. And there are some fields that, you know, I don't care how much Roundup or anything else that you were putting on there, they persisted. And it did well. There's a lot of Liberty beans raised also in our area. And this year there were some Liberty bean fields that were still pretty ugly. And I think that was primarily because we could not get our early post done. Yeah. It was a little bit late, and my extend beans, I was able to get it, and my fields were clean. There were a lot of Liberty fields, and I think it's a good technology too. I'm not knocking the herbicide at all, but they did not kill those larger weeds, and they grew out of it. And there's still some weed patches out in fields that were never harvested.
So have you talked to neighbors? I guess where I'm going with this is, if you're going to continue planting Extend, are the neighbors now going to plant Extend? I mean, is that a conversation you've been having with your neighbors that are right next to your fields?
Well, where I have a little bit of sensitive areas, I will also use Liberty technology. Where, okay, if I'm surrounded on three or four sides, I don't know that I really want to take that chance. I don't like switching around, but in those particular, I think that that's probably where people are going to need to be going, because
yeah,
I had several people ask me, you know, did you use Extend? Because they had fields that were not looking too pretty, you know, come August, and mine were pretty clean.
Yeah, so now they're thinking about switching. Yeah, I get it. Well, hey, Mike, it's been great talking to you today. Really appreciate your time, and best of luck to you as you go into 2019.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Mike. All right, we will continue talking about dicamba-tolerant crops, and we will get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. That's all coming up next.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating, to say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instinct and NSERF maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, along with my brother Darren, broadcasting today from the Morton studio. We're talking about dicamba-tolerant crops, and here are just a couple of the things that I've learned over the last couple years if you want to avoid any issues, or at least dramatically reduce any potential issues. And as I say this, I want you to keep in mind that this is not just a discussion for the Xtend or dicamba-tolerant corn, or sorry, soybeans and cotton. It's also about corn. It's about really any crop, where maybe it's sorghum, whatever crop you have, pastures, where you are applying dicamba. Dicamba can move. That's just the way it is. But there are a lot of herbicides that can move. The thing that kind of separates dicamba from others is that soybeans are just so unbelievably ultra sensitive to dicamba. It's crazy. Roughly, you can figure about 5 to 10 to 1 compared to 240. In other words, it takes such a small dose compared to even 24D, you know, that you can see the leaf cupping, just any little symptom on that plant. You don't have to have much. Now, again, it probably won't hurt yield if the level is that low, but still, we don't want to be dinging up anybody's soybeans. So anyway, these are the things that we are doing on our own farm, and these are the things I've advised farmers to do for the last couple of years now to help reduce the problem. Number one, it's just spray early in the season. You know, and we've known that for years. It's the same thing on corn from years ago when virtually every farmer in the United States was using dicamba on corn. We just said, hey, spray early when that corn is, if you can, V2, at the very most V5, but it's very early in the season. Well, it's the same thing here. If you're going to spray dicamba in July, it's going to act differently as opposed to dicamba in May or early June. So spray early. Like on our farm, our cutoff was June 15th. And yes, that can create some problems because the crop isn't canopied yet. So you got to have really good residual herbicides that you're using either in combination with dicamba, or before dicamba, after dicamba, whatever. You're going to have to use other herbicides, other modes of action. Okay, so spray early in the season. Next thing is, for us, we like spraying dicamba all by itself. The fewer things I have in there, and Joe Sheffers mentioned ammonium sulfate. Ammonium sulfate can increase volatility with Xtendimax. We get concerned about ammonium sulfate with any dicamba and increasing volatility. So, you know, the fewer things you have in there, the better off you typically are. Just follow the label on that. But like on our farm, all we were spraying was either Engenia or Xtendimax or Fexapan and whatever adjuvant we needed just for that. That's all we did on that one application. You certainly can throw other things in there. I prefer to spray it separately. The big thing and the big difference between my recommendation and the label is I told guys spray 4 hours after sunrise and 4 hours before sunset. That's when you needed to have that window. And I realize that makes it tough because there aren't a lot of times in the middle of the day where it's not windy. But if you do that, you've almost completely eliminated any chance of being anywhere near any inversion. I worry so much about it before sunset. 2 years ago, or 2017, the 2017 growing season, when I was all around the United States and I saw all these dicamba movements, almost invariably, guys were spraying in the evening. I know it feels like that's the right time to spray because the wind is dying down. But the problem with spraying in the evening is humidity levels go up. There's more dew at that point, or it starts to come on, which means you've now extended your rain fast time, which means there's more product sitting there longer, and then there's more chance for that to volatilize. If you have finished your application well before sunset, now that product should have dried onto the plant and you have virtually eliminated your chance for volatility. So that's the reason why you want to finish early. And I know the label doesn't say it's that restrictive. Just follow the label if there's nobody around you that's got a sensitive crop. But if you're right next to the neighbor that has a sensitive crop, I'm going to finish my spraying much earlier. Okay, in the day. That's what I would suggest. And here's my last tip for you. And this is a tip I learned from a farmer down in Arkansas who the first year I was seeing all these fields in Arkansas where they had problems and this guy had none. And he goes, well, Brian, I figured this thing out. This is easy. We've sprayed dicamba for years. He said, all I do is I pay attention to what direction is the wind blowing today and tomorrow. Not just today, but today and tomorrow. Because he said what will happen with dicamba, he goes, we've used it for years and years and years. Sometimes it'll volatilize. Okay, well, when it volatilizes, what does that mean? That means there's some vapors that go up in the air. Well, if the wind changes direction, well, then that tells you the stuff is blowing the other way, right? So he said, I'm not that dumb. I just look at what the weather is. And if I've got a sensitive neighbor on the south side, I just make sure that the wind is blowing and it's going north for 2 days in a row, and that's when I spray. Problem solved. And he said, I haven't had any issues. And everybody else is having all kinds of problems. I spray thousands of acres. I have no problem. So I thought that was really good advice, and we've started telling people the same thing. So those are just some things that you can do. And again, it's anytime you're spraying dicamba, and for that matter, any herbicide you spray. You know, you've got to be really careful about how you use herbicides. All herbicides, what's the by very definition, the herbicide will kill a plant, another plant species. Okay, well, unfortunately, a lot of our corn herbicides will kill soybeans. A lot of our soybean herbicides will kill corn. A lot of our cotton herbicides will kill corn. You know where I'm going with this. So we just, as farmers, have to be real careful. We farm next to lots of neighbors, and we're going to live next to those neighbors for years and years. So we just need to be as responsible and as careful as possible when spraying any pesticide, and then we're in good shape. But the future of dicamba-tolerant crops, as my final summary here is, it's not going to stay straight dicamba, I do not believe. I'm almost positive that it is going to go to dicamba stacked with Liberty, and then you'll be spraying the dicamba as a burn down, which is great, as an early post product, which is great because it does have a little residual. Then you can follow up later on with Liberty. That, to me, sounds like a really good program, so I think that's the direction we're going to see everything going.
All right, let's get to some of the Ag PhD mailbag questions.
It's the mailbag!
This one comes from Brian, not my brother Brian, but another Brian. He said, I love your show. Now that you've introduced me to prostrate pigweed, a segment on the difference between that and purslane would be helpful. The internet is not much help. Hey, you know, that's an interesting one, Brian, because they're both weeds that really are opportunistic. They grow where nothing else is growing, so you have no crop canopy out there, and they spread really low to the ground. And both of these weeds can produce a lot of seeds. They both start from one central point. So if you said, I'm going to go pull them, well, you sure can, because they just start from one central point. They're pretty easy to pull, but they can really spread quickly. The big difference to look for is purslane is a succulent, and it has these thicker, fleshier leaves, where prostrate pigweed is not. So that would be the big thing. And then the leaf shape is going to be a little different. Purslane is often described as having a spoon-like leaf shape, and prostrate pigweed is going to be spatulate to ovate.
Okay. We get questions like this from time to time, and I'm not saying it's a bad question. It's actually a great question. But the thing is, at the end of the day, I try to keep stuff really simple for me and for our farm. And I just look at weeds all kind of lumped together when they are similar. These are annual weeds. They both grow roughly in about the same places, and I can kill them with pretty much the same herbicides. So I really care about knowing the difference between them? I don't really that much at the end of the day. It's just like Palmer pigweed and water hemp. Now, you may have particular beliefs or emotions about one versus the other, but to me, I kill them with exactly the same herbicides. They do exactly the same type of damage in my field. They're both horrible. But what difference does it make if it's Palmer pigweed or water hemp? I'm going to use the same products. So the big thing is I want to spend my time on how do I get them under control rather than necessarily figuring out, do I have Palmer pigweed or do I have water hemp? I don't care. They're both pigweeds. I hate them both. I want to get them under control.
All right. The difference may be, Brian, that some people like to eat purslane. And if you're going to eat it, then you would probably want to know what the difference is.
Okay.
But I think eating it, you're going to know what the difference is. I thought it was interesting, too, with purslane, Brian. If you look it up, just do a Google search for purslane.
Yep.
And what you're going to find is it looks like the side of a food box. It's going to tell you that it has a little bit of potassium and a little bit of a couple of vitamins in it. Anyway, I thought that was kind of funny. All right. We'll get right back with more of your questions right after this.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say, Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
This is a demonstration of what it's like to maximize your nitrogen with Instinct and Enserve.
Instinct and Enserve nitrogen stabilizers work like an echo, but instead of your voice coming back to you, you get cash back, an extra $21 per acre on average. So don't just stabilize nitrogen, maximize it, and your corn will give you the max in return. Learn more at maxinmaxout.com.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
BASF presents 5 Things to Do After Harvest. Number 5, feel what it's like to not have boots on your feet. Number 4, remember that your daughter is in 3rd grade, not 4th. Number 3, get the hum of the grain dryer out of your head. Number 2, eat breakfast while sitting down. And number 1, analyze your results and plan for next year. From all of us at BASF to growers everywhere, thanks for all your hard work during Harvest 18. Grow smart with BASF. We create chemistry.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. And we got a great question here. This one got sent in about high-speed tillage. It says, how do you feel about high-speed tillage like the high-speed compact discs? Are they a sound agronomic way to handle residue this spring if I don't get my fall tillage done? If I don't get my fall tillage done, still hopeful, Brian. I like that. to still have some hope here at the end of November that we still may get it done. And you know what? Every once in a while, we get lucky.
There's
and
one
conditions
time,
straighten out.
One time in the last 25 years, we've been able to do stuff in December once. So those odds are 4%. That's
well,
not
and,
real
and
likely,
we don't know
but,
where this question yes. came from because
absolutely.
I didn't,
could
didn't
be
say
from
state.
Further south. But anyway, with high-speed disks, yes, they are very popular at this point because we're not doing as much damage to the soil, or I should say creating as much compaction in the soil with those as opposed to if you use a regular disc or, you know, some other type of tillage tool that might be, let's call it, heavier. Darren and I were just talking about this. We saw this question come in during the break, so Darren just made the comment. We have to make sure that we're still creating a good seed bed out there and a good floor. That's a little bit of our concern is, are we setting ourselves up well? Are we creating any compaction? Are we going to leave a halfway decent seed bed for whatever we're going to put in the ground this spring? So overall, though, yeah, we've used these types of machines before. I don't have any real big problem with them. Haven't seen any real big issues. So I don't know. Unless you have something negative to say, Darren, I would say...
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's probably fine. Vertical tillage is what a lot of people will call this.
Yeah, I just get concerned about giving each plant an even opportunity out in the field. And when we see an uneven tillage floor, it's something to watch for. And also, I would say this. On these pieces of equipment, there are some adjustments that you can make. Take your time when you get out there. I know everybody's in a rush, and if there is an opportunity for some fall tillage, it's going to be really tempting just to go. But take the first half an hour or something and make some adjustments out there. See if you can get things set just right. And if you can, you're going to be much happier with the job that you do and what kind of yields you see the following year or the following season. All right. Getting a lot of questions about workshops, Brian. I'll start with this one. This one comes from Gabe. And he said, I'm located in southeast Missouri. In the past, I've been to your workshops in Sikeston, Missouri, and Murray, Kentucky. They're relatively close locations for me. Just wondering what your winter workshop schedule looks like and when you're going to be down in my area. Hey, Gabe, thanks. We don't have workshops in those particular locations this year. We're going to be across in Bloomington, Illinois, January 16th. We're going to be a little south of you down in Brinkley, Arkansas, February 25th. Of course, we'll be in the Phoenix area at Gilbert, Arizona, January 21st. It's a cheap trip to a warm destination if you'd like to head down there. So we've got a few different options, but we won't be right in your hometown this year. We do tend to move those locations around a little bit year to year and try to get in a local area for more people over a period of time.
Hey, one of the things that I would say too, if you're interested in coming to our farm, we do some back-to-back workshops. In other words, 2 days in a row, we are doing workshops. So we've got one opportunity in January where we're back to back and another one in February. So four different types of workshops, four different days of covering alternate materials. And I would just say I realize that the travel may be a little prohibitive for you, but you can fly into Sioux Falls. It's just 10 minutes from our farm. And we've got great stuff for you over a two-day period. And then you're right on our farm, and you can kind of see, well, we've got a nice facility and everything else. And part of the reason why we do this, we have to obviously try to keep our costs down. We're in the same position as every other farmer is out there. You know, farm economy isn't as great today as it was 6-7 years ago. So we got to try to do things to keep our costs down a little bit too. But, you know, having it on our own farm makes that easy. But yes, we are still going to have a number of workshops around the country. Love to have you join us at any of those.
All right. Matthew wrote a question. He said, will you guys be doing an advanced soils clinic this winter again? I couldn't make it last year, but would like to attend. And Matthew, this is one of those things like Brian was just talking about a minute ago, that we've got some back-to-back days that we're doing workshops right on our farm here.
But we don't have an advanced soils clinic. We don't have any soils clinics or advanced soils clinics this year.
So we've got a workshop called What Your Fertilizer Dealer Won't Tell You. And there are going to be some things there that are going to be quite interesting, which would
yes.
be along the same lines as what you're looking for. And
soils clinics,
certainly
yes.
At our workshops, you can ask us any specific questions that you want. You can bring your soil tests along. We'll have a lot of agronomists at our meetings as well. We can set you up with an agronomist or take a look at your soils test and give you our ideas, just taking a quick once over on some of the things. So you've got some time there over lunch breaks, over the breaks in the workshops, and also before and after the workshops, if you come a little early or stay a little late, to ask some really specific questions for your farm if there's more things that you want to get into that just weren't a big topic for that day.
Hey, since we're talking about workshops, two other things. Most of our workshops this year, it's titled 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Today. So many people are looking at cutting expenses, and we want to talk specifically about ways to do that. There was a good example today of a farmer who was applying urea in the fall. We're going, urea in the
and
fall?
Not tilling it really, in, just landed on top of it.
Right, that's really risky. So, you know, there are a number of things that we are going to talk through, everything from fertility, herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, tillage, traits, you name it, and it's going to vary a little bit depending on the location. Obviously, when we're doing this in Spokane, Washington, they don't raise the same crops as they do in Bloomington, Illinois. So the topics will be a little bit different, but we are going to go through a lot of ways that you can look at on your farm to keep your expenses down. Now, as I say that, ultimately, I don't care about farm expenses as much as I care about farm income. We want to increase income, but we have to take a look at costs all the time. Okay, so the other one that I wanted to mention is for the first time, we're going to do an Ag PhD collegiate agronomy workshop. It's going to be early. It'll be the first one we do, the first workshop we do this winter. It'll be Thursday, January 3rd. Why are we doing it that early? Because pretty much every college or university we know is still on Christmas break on January 3rd. So if a person is in college, and you don't have to be in college, you could be in high school, you could be a 60-year-old farmer and show up, we don't care. We're just going to go through a lot of basic things like how to read a soil test, weed, insect, and disease control in corn and soybeans. We're going to talk about traits in corn and soybeans, seed treatments. We're also going to go through some basics on tiling, pesticide safety, food safety, water quality, a lot of these types of things. But here's the other big kicker and the thing that's different with this workshop than anything else. If you are a college student, a current college student, you have the chance to win one of 20 college scholarships we're giving away that day. So go to agphd.com if you'd like to learn more about that.
All right. Speaking about some of the things at our workshop, one of the things we'll do is talk about what we term our first steps plots at the Ag PhD Field Day. Got a question about that from Mark. He said, I was reading up in last year's agronomy workshop book, and in the plot yield results, I noticed there's no check against what these high yield growers are doing in the first steps plots. Now I'm wondering, what do you take from those first step plots? How do you determine anything that you want to use based on them when you don't compare against a check?
Yeah, well, we don't compare against a check. Let's keep in mind, we've got 7 different people in there for corn and for soybeans. So, you know, you can look at who's the high guy, who's the low guy, what different things did you do. Also, we do farm 3,000 acres in addition to this. So we've got plenty of ground right around it where I can tell you what the yield is there. And we do talk about during the workshop, and this is why you can read all kinds of stuff out there. But when you actually come to our workshops, we can give you, let's say, more of an unfiltered explanation of what's actually happening out in fields, what we like, what we don't like. We're trying to learn from these things too. A lot of these high yield farmers that come to our farm, it's fantastic for everybody out there. Pick up a few things, and yeah, there are some things that, you know, these farmers are going to do that you say, I'm already doing that, or that's really not working. But boy, this thing, that's kind of unique, and it seems like that's impacting yield. So lots to learn from there, and we will talk through that at our workshops this winter.
Really appreciate the discussion today about dicamba tolerant crops. Certainly there's a lot of positives there, but there are also some things to watch out for, and really like some of the changes on the label and the clarifications there to help us do the best job we can. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.